it really starts with education. It starts with doing the research on what has happened for centuries in our country.
Deep down in your gut, you know there's more to life than waking up for school or work, going through the motions just to get by, and living for the weekend. But you're still scared and uncertain about what your true purpose in life is. Welcome to the Free Time Podcast, your very own community and virtual support group created to help you leverage your free time as a valuable asset so you can start to improve your mindset, learn self-empowerment skills, and ultimately find true fulfillment to move you towards the incredible life that was specifically created for you to live. This is more than a podcast dropping 3 episodes a week. This is a movement built around real people sharing real stories, focused on helping you make the most of your life by becoming super intentional with your time. Brought to you by your host, Carl Sona.
Now, before we get into today's episode, I'd like to make a quick announcement. We're on a mission to build a movement here around the topics of self-empowerment, mental health, and personal fulfillment. These are all some really big topics that we all deal with as human beings, but also they're topics that will look a little different for each of us as individuals. And so I'd love to put a name with the face and learn more about who you are and where you are currently along your journey. So I'm super excited to announce that I'm offering free 15-minute Zoom phone calls with me in order for us to get better acquainted. If you're at all interested in this, please hit the link to my calendar in the show notes below to sign up for a time, and I'll see you there. Now, without further ado, let's jump into our episode today. Welcome back, and thank you for tuning into another episode of the Free Time Podcast. Today, we're going to do something a little different and very, very special for y'all. Today's episode is part one of three of a series of conversations centered on Black Lives Matters and what we can all do to actually bring about real, lasting change. I've had several of my white friends reach out to have conversations about racial injustices that our country is currently dealing with. And I know that a lot of people are really struggling with how they can start to use their privilege in order to be more proactive in the fight against racism. And so I thought that'd be a very good opportunity to bring my homie Ike Alozium on just to discuss a little bit more about how we can start and keep these conversations going in a way that gets us all to become more united. Ike, like myself, is an African-American man. In my opinion, he is like the unofficial mayor of wherever he goes because of his ability to warm people up and draw them in with his huge smile and humor. I've probably never come across an individual that's so good with so many different types of people. And so our goal with this three-part series will be to leverage some of Ike's charm so we can create a safe and welcoming space to get you to better understand how you can be empowered to start and keep conversations going towards real change. Ike, thanks so much for being here, bro, and welcome on.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you for having me, man. I'm excited for today. You know, I woke up a little bit nervous, but, you know, at the end of the day, we're all trying to change the world, you know, and so I'm excited to be on this podcast with you.
Bro, I feel you on that, man. I mean, as a Black man, you know, I've been very nervous as well, too. There's so much going on that really isn't anything new, man. I mean, like, we've seen this happen time and time and again, right? And it's almost like our world is being forced to remember that we still have an issue here that has never truly been solved. I find it so fitting that, like, we have the podcast and all these new ways of being able to keep the conversation going, but I'd be lying if I told you, you know, a few weeks ago when George Floyd happened that I was actually prepared to talk about it just because I had to process so much, man. Like, how have you personally been, man? I mean, like, what has your mood been? Can you describe to us what the thought process has been for you over the past few weeks as everything has been unfolding?
Yeah, man, I'm with you on those emotional, you know, the emotional roller coaster that, you know, everything that, you know, we're going to discuss and that's happening in this world, you know. The last couple of weeks have been, you know, definitely, honestly, you know, the most challenging weeks I would say that, you know, I probably faced in my entire life. And so, you know, as I'm approaching 29 here in a few months, you know, with the death of George Floyd, like you alluded to earlier, we've seen this so often and it's continued to happen in our country for years and decades and centuries. And, you know, I think a lot of people, and I would honestly include myself, kind of in this, you know, in this boat. You know, initially when this happens, you know, you feel bad, you feel sad, you feel some type of way, but you don't really take any actions moving forward that will help, you know, really facilitate any type of change. And so we kind of almost turn a blind eye to it as a society. And, you know, with George Floyd, like a lot of people, I was moved in a way that I hadn't been moved, you know, ever before. Mm-hmm. I felt like at this time in my life, I don't know if it was due to the, you know, coronavirus and the, you know, and being, you know, in quarantine for so long and just having time to really self-reflect. I don't know if it was, you know, because I'm at the age now where I think about my future and I think about having kids with my girlfriend and things like that, and them not living in a world like this, you know, or yeah. a combination of really just everything. But, you know, I was moved, and, you know, obviously that happened on the 25th of May. And then we've got a few days later in my hometown of Omaha, Nebraska, a man by the name of James Scurlock was murdered by this bar owner downtown in Omaha, Nebraska, named Jake Gardner. And the circumstances, you know, surrounding that, there was a protest in Omaha that night. This was on the night of May 30th. And Jake Gardner went down there, had a gun, had an expired license to carry a gun, shot it off a couple times in the air, was yelling racial slurs. James Scurlock jumped on his back. And next thing you know, he shoots him in the clavicle, kills him in the streets.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there's a lot of things that have unfolded since then in terms of who Jake Gardner is as a person. And, you know, it's not pretty at all. But the fact of the matter is he was taken to jail that night, let out on bail that same night. And then the next day, I believe, the Omaha Police Department escorts him out of the city before they announce that he is facing no criminal charges.
Yeah.
Nothing whatsoever. Like I said, he, at the very least, he had an expired license to carry a gun. And so,
yeah.
You know, that in combination with George Floyd, in combination with everything else that I mentioned earlier, I just felt really moved to really do my part, you know, as a citizen here and as a person, as a human being, to help to facilitate that change. And so,
yeah,
you know, I'll be honest, it was, you know, like I said, I've learned a lot about myself. I've cried quite a bit, more than I, you know, probably have in a 2-week span.
Yeah.
And I've had more conversations with, you know, people in my life, and a lot of them difficult, challenging conversations, you know, mm-hmm. that I've ever been accustomed to. But, you know, like I was telling you earlier, you know, you find that strength in those conversations. And I think I'm to the point in my life where, you know, it's almost like I feel like I found my truest purpose, my truest calling. Mm-hmm. And, you know, something that we'll get into here is, you know, just it really starts with having these conversations.
Yeah. Yeah, man. And that's one thing I love about you, bro, is like you've always had a very visible giftedness for being able to conversate with so many different types of people. You know what I mean? And I think that we're at a point right now where we are being called to lend our voice towards something that's greater than each and every one of us. You know what I'm saying? Like, even for myself, man, every time that something like this happens, I feel like there's a small part of me that just sort of like dies and it becomes more hopeless. And my knee-jerk reaction is to almost like turn the cheek and tell myself like it's not happening. And so I've stayed silent in the past, but to your point, man, something about this George Floyd situation, and I guess now having this podcast too, and having this medium that really is designed to reach people with new like ideas, has really put like a new fuel within me and a new fire to start to like lend my voice towards something much more, towards something greater, right? That hopefully will bring about more unity, man. So let's actually go back to Omaha, man. Like you mentioned, that's your hometown. That's where you grew up. Like, tell us what life was like growing up in Omaha. Like, I know that you were raised by African parents in Omaha, Nebraska. Like, that probably couldn't have been like the most easy and straightforward process to have to navigate. So yeah. What was that like for you, man? And like for the audience listening, paint us a picture around young Ike having to grow up in Omaha with his parents and his family that don't look like a lot of people, quite frankly, from Omaha, Nebraska.
Yeah. And so I want you to jump in after, you know, I talk about this.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously, we have a very, very, very similar background. And so, you know, it was interesting to say the least. My parents moved here from Nigeria a couple years before I was born. But the way Omaha is broken down, it's kind of almost like a racial divide, which you see in a lot of, you know, American cities. And, you know, West Omaha is predominantly white folks. And then you have North Omaha, predominantly African Americans. You have South Omaha, predominantly Hispanics. And then you have East Omaha, which is a mix of old money and African-Americans. And so my family, we lived in North Omaha most of my childhood. And, you know, my dad always tells this story to this day about how he came here from Nigeria with just a backpack. And that was it. And just, you know, he was hustling. He had a couple of jobs. You know, he was working at this data center most of my childhood and also working, you know, part-time at Pizza Hut. And I remember going back to my childhood, how excited I would be when he would come home with these boxes of pizza and these wings and the breadsticks and the video games with PlayStation.
Yeah.
Because they had a partnership back then. But, you know, it was interesting. And I'm fortunate looking back on my childhood because, you know, even being in North Omaha, there's levels to the poverty and the injustice, even in that segment of the city, in terms of, you know, we lived in a nicer, you know, kind of like, I wouldn't say upper middle class, but middle class area in North Omaha, whereas like one of my best friends, Stallone Bates, you know, lived in, you know, a lesser part. And so we lived within 10 minutes of each other, both in North Omaha, a lot different experiences and circumstances in terms of, you know, our surroundings and our upbringing. But like I said, I was fortunate because my parents, I think I recognize this now, you know, they really did their best to really shield us from a lot of the realities that African-Americans in this country face on a day-to-day and a week-to-week basis. And what I mean by that is, you know, we were fortunate, like, you know, like yourself, where we went to Catholic grade school. We went to Jesuit high school. We went to a Jesuit college, you know, and the experiences that we had were a lot different than other African-Americans. Growing up, you know, it was interesting because grade school, we had a great melting pot. My very best friend to this day, Neil Peterson, who obviously you know very well, you know, that's where we met.
Shout out to Neil.
Yep. Shout out to Neil. You know, he brought us together and I'm forever thankful for that. But, you know, that's where we met and it was a melting pot there. And then I got to high school and probably similar to you, the majority of my classmates were white. And so naturally my best friends, you know, for the most part were white. And so, you know, luckily, you know, I think due to my personality and just the love that I've always shown, I feel like most people in my life, you know, I was able to build great relationships, you know, whether it was sports, whether it was just like in the classrooms with a lot of my friends. And so I'm sure we'll dive into this later on, but, you know, there's definitely some experiences that happened in high school that I reflect back on. And I wish I would have, you know, stood up for, you know, what was happening and what I truly felt. But unfortunately,
right.
You know, I was in high school.
Yeah, no, man. I mean, you hit the nail on the head. You know, the African immigrant story is one that I 100% resonate with too, man. Because, I mean, my parents, similar to yours, they came from Cameroon in like the late 80s, had me a few years after. And it's so interesting. You know, we look like Black people, but we didn't really identify with the African-American Black culture. Like, I can remember like my mom, who was a hustler. Like she worked like two nursing jobs, like went to school and like was raising me while my dad was trying to figure out his career. She would always be like, ah, look at these akatas, you know? And so for anybody that doesn't know, akata is like an African slang word for like African-American, like Black African-Americans. And I never really understood like what her beef was, but in her mind, you know, America was like the land of opportunity, which is why they came, right? To like study, to like build a life for their kids, that being me and my siblings, that was going to be better than what they ever had back home. But her beef was she felt like many Black Americans in this country weren't taking the opportunities as seriously as they were. And I never really understood it until maybe around sometime in high school when, to what you said, Ike, I went to a Jesuit school in the hood of Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And Milwaukee is very, very diverse too. It's almost the same layout as Omaha, where North is Black, South is Latino, West is white, and East is kind of, you know, a hodgepodge. But I started meeting more of like my more urban Black counterparts. And what I learned really opened up my eyes. What I learned was that many of my urban Black counterparts weren't shielded the way that I was, the way that you were, Ike. Like they had fathers, uncles, you know, and the list goes on that were incarcerated. Mm-hmm. Like they grew up in single family homes, many of them no real stability, right? And so they didn't really, they weren't shown anything greater in terms of an example. You know, for me, again, because my parents like worked so hard to make it in this like country, like education and like higher education, college was the expectation for many of my urban homies, you know, brothers and sisters that grew up in the more, you know, hood type parts of the city. They're like maybe the first one to even go to high school, to even graduate from high school. Mm-hmm. And so there's this disparity, right? There's this disparity that that we're living in. We're all, yes, Americans, but it's not really a unified playing field given some of the different environmental forces that are either working for us or against us. And so that's like the one thing I really started to hold on to, and I really started to kind of better understand that has created a lot of the divide that we see in this country today. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Yeah. It's funny that you say that. You know, I think back to high school, for example, you know, when I really obviously, like, my grade school is very small. Like I said, it was diverse, yeah, but our graduating class in eighth grade was 13 people. And so going into high school where now I'm with, you know, hundreds of classmates, it was weird because of who I am. I was able to fit in with any type of crowd, but I never really felt like there was someone that I could really connect with. And so what I mean by that, and I'm sure you can agree with this, is with the African Americans, you know, it was almost like they saw you as more African than African American. And, you know, you just didn't really feel like you can really connect with them.
Welcomed.
Yeah, exactly. You didn't really, you didn't feel.
You were kind of smelly.
Exactly.
Yeah, you you know, like my mom would always, and I used to get so upset. My mom would like, I was always like the last one to be dropped off. Like we were just, I'm always on African people time. And she would always wear something called a kaba. It's like traditional African dress wear. And so she would like wear like the big head tie and like the big gown and would be like running in to give me like my lunch because I would forget it in the seat because I was
being dropped off late. And it would be like, what are you wearing?
Yeah, it'd be like something cultural. And like she looked different. And like when you're like a kid in grade school, what's the worst thing? Being different. And so I always felt like, yeah, like the black people be like, oh, like, why she like dress funny or like why she smell funny? And like the white people, I mean, they just wouldn't get it. So you're kind of like on your own little island.
I remember back to grade school, even like we'd go to masses on Sunday. Like my parents are very, you know, very Catholic, very religious. They go to church every Sunday and, you know, I go to church weekly. But, you know, I remember back in, you know, in grade school, like when my mom, it wasn't every Sunday, but most Sunday decided to wear, you know, her African garments. And I'd be like, oh man, here we go. She's going to church. We're going to church. And we're gonna stand out. Everyone's gonna be looking at us in some type of way, you know. And that's what you would think about. This is like the actual big picture, and really feeling like, who cares, you know? Where, you know, I think I'm at the point in my life where I don't care about those things. But you know, it's funny to think back on those stories and those experiences. I think it really shapes who we turn into.
Yeah, man. Like, do you remember like the point in your upbringing where you started to embrace your culture a bit more, and you started to like wear it, you know, with honor, like, hey, I am African, or was it hard for you for a while?
Yeah, I would say, honestly, I think it's something that's still a little bit hard for me in some ways, but I think in, you know, over the last 5 to 7 years, I feel like I've been more comfortable and embraced it more, to answer your question. But, you know, it was hard because, you know, going back to high school again, it's like, there wasn't a lot of African, you know, or African Americans that we went to high school with. And so we fit in, and I kind of tailored who, you know, and the way I spoke or the way I dressed to the people that I was around, which was obviously the majority of the folks were white. And so, you know, going into college, kind of the same experience as going to Creighton University, where there was a little bit more diversity, obviously, but it wasn't to the extent where I felt like I belonged with a particular group or I could fit in. You know, the only times really growing up, I would say I felt like I belonged is when we had our Njongis or like African parties. You know, as a family, we would go to attend those, and, you know, they would have jollof rice, you know, they would have fufu, they would have, you know, the whole set every time. Yeah. You know, it's like a buffet for everyone. And, you know, those are the times where I could really embrace it. Outside of that, I felt like unless you came up to me and asked me about kind of my experiences or about my life, I didn't feel like necessarily that you wanted to hear that or felt comfortable, you know, with me speaking upon it. And so, you know, I would say over the last, you know, several years, I've been a lot more comfortable discussing those things, you know, discussing my experiences. And now I'm really to the point where, you know, I hope that anyone and everyone, you know, reaches out to us and is willing to have those conversations and ask me anything, because I feel like I'm to the point where I'm ready to be an open book.
And that's the beautiful thing, bro, is given our background, I really feel like people like us are in this middle ground where clearly we're black men, but we're Africans. And we're Africans that have been sort of ingratiated and indoctrinated with white culture, right? As our parents like work to provide all these opportunities by the way of education, right? Where we have a lot of people in our lives that are white people that are some of the closest people to us. You know, we both date white women. Some of our best friends are white, but we also have the black component where we have homies that are from, you know, the more urban areas and all these different things that I feel like we lend a very unique perspective to have this conversation.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. I think so much of the issue, and I just got off the phone with one of my business partners who's white, right? Who grew up in like Seattle, like never really saw a lot of black people. So much of the issue is like white people and black people have never really had the opportunity to engage with one another. Like, mm-hmm. I used to joke that, like, before my family moved to Milwaukee, Wisconsin, in, like, the suburbs, you know, around a lot of other white people, mm-hmm. that, like, we were, like, the first family that, like, white people ever had to their homes that weren't, like, service-based professionals, meaning it wasn't, like, the cable guy or the guy to, like, you know, do, like, the landscaping. Like, we were the first bit of culture for, like, white people to be around in order to really, like, understand, oh, wow, like, they're people, too. Like, they're kind of, like, just like us, but, like, darker. So, let's talk a bit about how we can actually create more engagement, because that is the issue, bro. Like, there are societal issues that have kept black people oppressed in this world for so long, right? That have sort of cut mm-hmm. off access to all these different things that the majority has had. And I feel like for the majority, you know, they just stay in their parts of town. They don't really travel to other parts of the town where minorities tend to live. And so there's just no opportunity for interaction.
Mm-hmm.
So talk about that, like specifically in like your world right now, is like, how can we interact more? How can we just be a part of like similar conversations, man? So that like, hopefully we can have these conversations that we're talking about, and hopefully like both sides, black and or white, can see like, yo, we actually have a lot more in common than what we would think, because at the end of the day, we're all fucking human beings, bro. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, that's something I thought about a lot lately in terms of, like I was telling you the other day when we spoke on the phone, you know, everything I feel like, I've always been a big believer in anything and everything in my life happening for a reason, good, bad, in between. And I've always been able to really, because I'm, you know, I tend to overthink everything, and whether it's good or bad, but I just overthink everything. Yeah. And so I connect a lot of dots that maybe not a lot of folks will connect in their lives in terms of, okay, this happened, and then this is how it led to me in who I am today. Yeah. And so, you know, going back to, you know, I'm forever grateful that my parents, you know, I always saw it as just simply, we're going to these private schools where tuition is expensive, and it's just because they want us to get the best education possible, which was in large part the case, but it was also to shield us from, like we talked about earlier, shield us from a lot of the experiences that other African Americans in this country, you know, don't have the pleasure of avoiding. And so,
right.
You know, I think thinking back on how we grew up and who we grew up around, you know, I'm forever grateful because it kind of shaped us in some ways into who we are, who we patterned ourselves to be. Like, I always think back, it's like in high school or now, for example, if I was wearing a do-rag or if I had saggy pants or if I had tattoos, like, would I have had the opportunities and been able to advance in my career like I have to this point? And I honestly think the answer is no, you know, just because of the color of my skin.
Right.
And so
if your name wasn't Ike and it was Devontae, would you have had some of the same opportunities? And I bring that up because my cousin, who is a girl who is black, her name is Kamina Engel White. And she was just telling me a story the other day about how when she was getting ready to graduate, her like counselor, her career counselor was like, hey, think about dropping the Ina and just going by Kim White. And she was like, what? So like, these are some of the things, you know what I'm saying? These are some of the things that we've had to think about, we've been able to think about, that some of our you know, counterparts, our black counterparts that are from like more urban areas have sort of been handcuffed to, you know what I mean? That like society judges as like, oh, like that's an African-American, and then it leads to profiling and all these different things.
Exactly, yeah.
You know what I mean?
The studies indicate that as well, in terms of like, if you have a more urban sounding name, you're less likely to, you know, be reached out to for a job interview, or less likely to be offered a scholarship, you know, things like that. The studies show it. Look it up. Definitely. But like I said, I'm forever grateful for the experiences, because I think because of who we truly are, you know, deep down inside you and I think what we've seen now, especially most recently with the death of George Floyd, is a lot of folks now are to the point, a lot of white folks especially, are now to the point where they feel comfortable reaching out and wanting to understand and wanting to know, you know, truly what experiences we've had in our life and how that's really shaped us to be who we are. Versus, I think, you know, going back to high school and college, we were always seen as, you know, that cool black dude.
Yeah.
And how many friends did you have in high school and college that would ask you, like, hey, can I call you the N-word? You know, and
oh my gosh.
And then the token black guy, you know.
The token. Yeah. Dude, bro. So let's talk about that for a while, because that was really hard for me. You know, I would always be approached by like my white friends as the token. And they'd be like, oh, well, Carl's not really black because he talks, you know, properly. Yeah. he doesn't sag his pants. And then to my black homies that were more urban, like
you're just like a white boy.
They would dare to call me Uncle Tom. Yeah. They'd be like, oh, Uncle Tom living out there in the suburbs, driving that car. And so it was like, yo, like, can I not just be Carl Sona? Can I not just wear some fucking Sperry's because I want to rock some Sperry's right now? Like,
can I not just wear Ralph Lauren because I feel comfortable in Ralph Lauren, you know?
You're the king of Ralph Lauren. You used to love that. But yeah, bro, I mean, like, it was a very confusing time because all of a sudden, to be black meant you didn't speak good English, you sagged your pants, and to be white meant you wore fucking American Eagle chinos with, like, Sperry's. And it's like, why do we have to, like, associate... like color to all these different things. Like, why can't we just be, man? What's your opinion on that? Because that for me was a tough pill. And like, I just became comfortable with that like a few years ago. Like literally just a few years ago. Like I've struggled with it for this so long.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. And that's exactly where I'm at too. It's like, you just recently become comfortable with it because, you know, going back to high school, you know, we had the uniforms and whatnot. But, you know, I remember when I first started high school, like my dad, we were wearing Walmart polos. So we had to wear a polo and shorts or pants with pockets on the inside. And my friends were wearing American Eagle and Hollister and Ralph Lauren. And I was rocking, you know, Faded Glory and things of that nature. And then you quickly kind of see that and you see the, you know, what everyone else is wearing. You want that and you aspire for it. And then, you know, and you realize that if you may dress like that in some ways, like you'll have a better chance of really advancing in life. And so I think I recognized that at a very early age where, like you alluded to, it's like, you know, we spoke properly and we were well educated and, you know, we dressed a certain way and that's allowed us to advance. But it sucks that the way society, to a large extent, views someone that, you know, for however they dress or speak in terms of who they actually are, it sucks that that's the case. And I think now, you know, I still have black friends in my life that will be like, oh, like you dress like a white boy, you know, and things like that. Or I dress like preppy. It's like, why can't it just be about why I want to dress that way and who I am as a person and that's it? And obviously, I'm sure you can agree with this. It's like, there's no one in my life that I feel like I'm, you know, I'm upset at or out to seek revenge or like I even thought like negatively about it. You just kind of accept it because you know who you are as a person and you know that they know that and they're just giving you a hard time. But the fact that the circumstances happen in that way to begin with, that's what we're trying to change for the future generations. And I think that's, you know, something that's really hit home for me recently.
Yeah, man. Well said. And I think, you know, everything that we're trying to do right now is, you know, Ike and I are opening it up right now because we just want to get the conversation going. Like, in my opinion, and Ike, I'm sure you would agree, so much of the radical change that we're looking for that will lead to a more positive and united world for our kids and our kids' kids, it's going to start with having conversations. Mm-hmm. I think everything does happen for a reason. And I know, I think it was like Neo that like just sang at George Floyd's funeral the other day.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
He got a lot of backlash because he used the term, you know, George Floyd's life was like a sacrifice in order for us to get to this place. And I know what he was saying. A lot of people came at him because a lot of people are really like emotionally charged right now, right? And looking to pick apart every single thing that we all say. But I think what Neo was trying to communicate was, unfortunately, and it's really sad, but it took, you know, the brutal murder of George Floyd by the hands of a white policeman for us to actually get to this place where globally, we're all like encouraging ourselves to think about how we have conversations and how we hear one another so that we can actually move forward, right? Towards some real change.
Yeah.
So I've had more conversations than ever about the topic of race. And it's been hard. It's been uncomfortable. It's been awkward at times. But I just feel so, so happy and optimistic about what it can bring about. You know, because for so long, these things have just been a big, ugly, pink elephant that we've sort of sidestepped. I mean, think about it, Ike. Like, how many times have you heard probably from some of your white homies little things being said
that don't really like sit well with you, but you haven't really said anything. I mean, I don't know if you can think of any experiences where.
Yeah. It's like going back to the, I don't mean to interrupt you, but going back to the, you know, the token black guy you know, at parties or in friend groups.
They get comfortable with you.
Hey, can I call you the N word? It's like, you don't think that, you know, that they don't mean bad by it, but they just don't know any better. But you also kind of want to fit in. And so you kind of accept it. But deep down inside, you know,
right,
I should stand up for myself and this is not okay, you know? And going back to what you were just saying, I think it's a combination. Like I said, I really try my hardest to really think about why things are happening and connect those dots. And I think one, with the advent of social media, it's now in people's spaces more than it's ever been. I also think because of the fact that we're in the midst of a pandemic that we've never seen since, you know, the Spanish flu, for example, it gives people that time where there's no sports, there's no distractions, really.
Right.
Where now you have George Floyd's death, now you have the microphone, you have the podium to really speak and talk about it. And we're at a point as a society where when you've seen over, I don't even know the numbers now, but 110,000 deaths, you know, with coronavirus, people are just tired of death as a whole. And so you see, whether you turned a blind eye to it before, whether you recognize it but didn't really say or talk or do anything about it, or whether you have always felt this way, you see a unity and you see that conversation starting. And I just hope it continues, you know?
Well, so let's talk about how it can continue. You're dating a white girl right now. I'm dating a white girl. And we have both had to have those conversations with our future in-laws about everything that's going on. And I think you're certainly experiencing some resistance, right? Right. And I think that it's probably because there is a threat in terms of how white people feel like they're being viewed. You know, I think that this is a tough time for a lot of white people. And don't get me wrong, it's been a hard time for black people for the test of time, but especially for white people right now, because people are probably questioning, like, shit, am I a racist? Like, have I been a racist? Oh, no, I'm not a racist. Like, I have a black friend. Like, I dated a black guy. I dated a black girl. Like, there's all of this, like, conversation that's top of mind in terms of how people view themselves, right?
Yeah.
That if we're not careful, it can keep folks trapped in their head and unable to continue the conversation. So let's unpack this right now, Ike. Like, in my opinion, the first thing for white people to do or to keep top of mind, especially if they're thinking about like educating themselves or what the right thing to do is with their privilege, is to keep an open mind and to just actively listen. You see what I'm saying?
Exactly. Yeah. And that's the biggest thing that we're stressing and we're urging, you know, our white, you know, friends, you know, all walks of life to really do right now. You know, you think back to, for example, 2016 with Colin Kaepernick, you know, he peacefully tried to create awareness in terms of where we are now, finally, you know, getting to the point now as a society.
Right.
And he's now blackballed from the NFL. You know, it became about the flag. The narrative was completely changed versus what he was truly fighting for, which were, you know, the social injustices that continue to plague our, you know, our country. And so now we fast forward to 2020. And like we talked about before, you know, it really starts with the conversations. And I feel like a lot of people recognize that and understand that and are now open and willing to do that. But the way I see it, and the reason that I see this as one of the most important, you know, parts of this movement, is because if you're willing to hear those experiences and have those conversations and just really uncomfortable things that you've never really talked about before, you know, on both ends, and then you share those with people in your lives, you know, whether it's friends or family members that don't have the pleasure of having a black friend or don't have the pleasure of potentially having a black in-law. And now they have a better understanding of some of the things that are going on in our society on a day-to-day basis. And they continue to spread that information, so on and so forth. That's how we continue the conversation. That's how we continue, you know, the actions that we've seen already in the last 3 weeks, which will eventually lead to the change that I feel like so much, you know, a lot of us really do want. And so, like you talked about, it really comes down to, at the end of the day, all we're asking for, it's not about getting defensive. It's not about, we're not calling you racist all of a sudden. We haven't changed how much we love you or care about you or how we view you. All we're asking for is just take the time to listen, to actively listen, think about what we're talking about, understand it, and in whatever way, shape, or form, take action and continue to pass that message along. That's all we're asking for.
Yeah, yeah. And I really want to like come back to this topic of active listening. You know, you hit the nail on the head, bro. This is a very unique time. And I almost kind of feel like, you know, as shitty as the pandemic has been, that it's going to prove to be a true gift for us, because a lot of the traditional distractions are not something we have to deal with right now, right? In other words, it's not as easy to just like turn off the news and put on the game.
Yeah.
So people are actually being encouraged to think about this shit right now. And so if you're a white person and you find yourself going to this place in your mind where it's like, well, you know, I've given to black charities, or I support black businesses, or I like hip hop culture, I'm not racist. Like, that's the first sign, in my opinion, that you need to check yourself, right? Because your mind is already taking you down this path of saying this message, everything being discussed, doesn't apply to you because you've already been doing your part.
Yeah.
And that's not the case.
Like, you've hit your black quota for your life.
Like, you hit your black quota. And bro, that was my issue. That was my issue with the black square on social media, like a couple of weeks ago. I saw everybody muting themselves. And I love it. Yes, it's a good thing. You stand in there for a good cause. But my fear, and again, I'm a black man that every single time a story like this comes out, the George Floyds, the Breonna Taylors, the Oscar Grant, a part of me just shrivels and dies because I'm losing hope that like real change will never actually ever come about. And those things, like the black square, in my mind is taken as that's a quick, easy thing to do, that people are telling themselves that they've already done their part and like their hands are washed of the situation. You know what I mean? Like, we have to take more open, honest ownership over everything going on. It's going to be all of us coming together. It's going to be all of us coming together in order for us to not have to deal with this bullshit one day. And the very first thing that you got to do is just check yourself and just put yourself in the position to learn. And that's by listening. So what does that actually look like? Now, let's give them an example. So I know you've had a lot of conversations with your girlfriend's family as of late, and they haven't really been as open to hearing you. I mean, help us understand what exactly is going on, because I think we can use this as an example to illuminate what active listening looks like.
Yeah, I mean, you know, without sharing the, you know, specific details, you know, you know, and things like that, you know, because I do want them to hear this and understand this, and again, not continue to get defensive. You know, what that looks like is, you know, I reached out to, you know, each of them, or we've had conversations where they've reached out to me, and my message has been, I'm ready to finally, I feel like for the 3 years that, you know, I've known them, I feel like I've not truly who I am as a person, been able to express the inner depth of my being. And so now I'm to the point where, like we talked about earlier, I'm ready to have, you know, these uncomfortable conversations and share my experiences and give them a wealth of knowledge in terms of what it's like to be an African-American in our country on a day-to-day basis. And so the response, kind of like what you were alluding to, you know, with, I'm sure you've experienced this in your life, you know, was in some ways, you know, defensive, and I'm not a racist, and this is how I feel in terms of this, or it's how I feel in terms of that. When again, it like we're talking about, it comes down to just truly actively listening, because it's not a debate. Like, there's 450 plus years that show that this is a continued problem in our country. This is not a debate. And if we're on the same side and we agree that we're not racist and we support the Black Lives Matter movement and things like that, at this point, we all have to be anti-racist. You know, we all have to do, whether it's having conversations, whether it's taking action, but on a continued basis. So moving forward, we're, like you talked about, we're not living in a world where our kids or our kids' kids, you know, in the future generations are living in such disparity and inequality. And so, you know, it's been, you know, I remain hopeful, and I'm excited for, you know, the future with them and the future conversations. But, you know, I'm reading a book right now. It's called So You Want to Talk About Race. I highly recommend it to, you know, anyone looking for a book that will shed some light on what exactly is happening right now and why it's happening. But, you know, one thing that's opened my eyes to is just, you know, all perspectives. And I feel like, prior to the last few weeks, like we talked about earlier, you know, we felt the pain, we felt the sadness, but we didn't really act upon that. And I think a lot of people were in that same boat. And now I feel so compelled to, you know, do my part as a human being, as an African American, to speak for anyone and everyone and connect those dots. And, you know, it you know, like we talked about, it really comes down to, you know, as much active listening as possible from, you know, from the white folks, and really hearing what we're saying and the circumstances that we've experienced in our lives, and sharing those messages and having those conversations. And we want to hear from you, obviously, too, but there's no need to feel defensive. There's no need to, you know, to lash out and feel like this is a personal attack on you in any way, shape, or form. You know, it's not. We're speaking for the general, you know, consensus here.
Well, on that note, man, you know, I think that there are a lot of white people that probably feel like it's a personal attack, right? Because the very movement, Black Lives Matters, I think some white people hear that and they're like, wait, so white lives don't matter? Mm-hmm. You know, and so they're sort of quick to fire back with all mm-hmm. lives matter. 100% agree, all lives matter. And if you agree that all lives matter, well, then it would only make sense that Black lives matter, because Black lives are a part of
exactly. Lives. I use the burning house analogy. It's like, if you're in a neighborhood and
yeah,
there's a burning house and the fire department shows up, it's like, is the fire department going to go through, you know, each and every house to check and see if there's a fire, or is the fire department going to go straight to the house that is on fire right now? And for a long time, the African-American house has been on fire. And so nobody's debating whether all lives matter or not. The problem is, for that to happen, like you said, Black lives have to matter, and they haven't mattered. And so let's figure out together what we can do so that they do matter, and they do matter equally, and every life matters equally moving forward.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and I think in order to kind of move towards an equal playing field, which in this country, it's not been an equal playing field for the test of time. There's definitely been a white America and a Black America, but I think that we as Black people also need to assume a level of responsibility. And I think a lot of Black people may not like what I'm about to say here, because I've gotten some backlash for it at times. But
I'm excited to hear this.
I think that we finally have arrived to a place as a collective humanity to where all eyes are on us. We actually have a platform where people are encouraging and challenging themselves to see our perspective, right? A perspective that has been really downtrodden and has sort of been shuffled aside based upon a lot of societal oppressive forces that have, you know, been a part of our nation for so long. And so because we finally have this stage, I think that it's on us as well to arrive to the new challenge, right? And to arrive at the opportunity by taking a hold of the mic and sharing our experiences. I mean, people are finally listening. And so for Black people out there right now, they're like, oh man, like, it's not my place to educate some white dude about what my perspective has been. In my opinion, like, that's not a very helpful mentality, because it continues to add to the gap, right?
Yeah.
That has existed between Blacks and whites in this country for the longest time. Mm-hmm. So we, as awkward, uncomfortable, challenging, you know, the whole host of adjectives that this situation makes us feel, as much of all that is still the case, it is still our responsibility to find a way to share with white people or people in the majority what our lived experience has been. And that's just how I feel. You know, without that, white people are going to continue to operate on some of the stereotypes that have existed forever. Without us opening our mouths, white people will continue to operate in terms of the bubbles that they've been living with, right? Like they're actually, for the most part, not all, but for the most part, they're actually looking to educate themselves. And I know that it's an uncomfortable and, quite frankly, an awkward thing for them to say, hey, like, I didn't even know what white privilege was 3 weeks ago, but I'm now starting to kind of come around to the fact that, wow, you know, I've been on this course that has been significantly easier for me than it has been for you. Can you help me understand what your side has been like? And I'm hoping that Black people will take a hold of that platform that we're being given right now, and that we'll actually speak very openly and honestly about what we've experienced, so that hopefully those white people can go back to their bubble and share with their other white folks what it's actually like, and hopefully bring down some of those divisive, you know, barriers that have been up forever, really keeping us from understanding that we're more alike than what we would be led on to think.
Exactly. Yeah. Because at the end of the day, this is not a black thing. This is a white thing in terms of, you know, really the solution moving forward, because we've spoken about it for how long now and nothing has really changed. And so that's why, yes, it may feel like, again, a personal attack or where you really need to get defensive, but that's not what it is by any means. We're simply urging you, because you have the power and you've had the power, to act upon that power so that we can actually facilitate this change that we all want. And so, you know, it's funny that you talk about the black folks out there, because I have a few close friends, you know, for example, that, you know, they feel like if someone isn't reaching out to them right now specifically, or they, you know, and they were close to them in the past, if they're not reaching out and saying, you know, kind words or haven't said anything, you know, they're deleting them, they're blocking them off of their social media.
Right.
And again, going back to what you're saying, it's like, that is not going to solve anything here.
Right.
You've got to, you know, it's a two-way street in some ways, and you've got to be open and still ready to have those conversations and stop assuming the worst. Because if you continue to assume the worst and they're trying to do their best, you're just never going to come up, you know, you're never going to meet in the middle. And so, you know, that, you know, I would urge, you know, my black friends that feel like, oh, I've spoken up about this for decades or for years, and look where we are. It's like, finally, but you feel like you almost are out of words at this point. Continue to speak.
Yeah.
Now we have this microphone. Continue to talk about it. Continue to engage people. Continue to have these conversations with anyone in your life, because that's how this continues. And so, you know, it's been, you know, we talk about the term white privilege. And I think, you know, for the white folks out there, again, like you talked about, you really have to take a step back and versus trying to act like this isn't a thing that exists, or trying to act like you haven't, because you've had life a little bit rougher than other white folks, that you don't agree with the term white privilege. Just take a step back and think about the fact that, have you ever, because of the color of your skin, been at a disadvantage? You know, whether it was applying to schools, whether it was getting a job, whether it was, you know, anything political, whether it was, you know, the friends that you had, whether it was, you know, money, you know, whether anything, you know, and it's like, have you been at a disadvantage because of the color of your skin? If the answer is no, that's exactly what white privilege is.
Yeah.
And so that's where it starts, is just acknowledging and accepting it for what it is. It's not an attack on you. We're not saying that, oh, you are lucky you had white privilege and you should be grateful and thankful and you should be doing everything in your power to really help change it. That's not what we're saying. We're saying just acknowledge that, take a step back, actively listen versus being defensive, hear where we're coming from, and continue to spread the knowledge that we're giving you.
Yeah.
And I think that's where it starts in terms of, you know, the term white privilege, and, you know, accepting that for what it is, understanding that your life hasn't been as hard because of the color of your skin. Like we talk about cops, for example, that's a big topic right now, obviously, defund the police and, you know, police brutality, etc. It's like, have you really ever feared when you got pulled over, have you really ever feared that this could be the last time that you're driving your car?
Right.
The answer is no, if you're white. And so at the end of the day, it's like just understanding that and continuing to actively listen, is, I think that's where we're going to have the biggest impact.
Yeah. You know, and I think that like the biggest objection that comes to the minds of white people when they hear white privilege is, well, I've had X, Y, and Z happen to me. Mm-hmm. Like I'm not privileged. Right. And again, that's that immediate spark of defensiveness that cuts ground for conversation going forward. Right. Because whether or not you're aware, if that's like the knee-jerk instinct that your brain immediately pivots to and that like wants to clench onto for dear life, there's a good part of you that's not even open to receiving the possibility that white privilege is indeed a thing, and that it's actually worked, you know, for you in your favor and against people that look like Ike and I. So I really want to help people get to this place where we can stop being so reactive, because I really do think that if we can find a way to stop being so reactive, that we can take information that's communicated to us more objectively, right? Without attaching emotion to it. And we can actually give ourselves like a few seconds to actually process it, you know, to then say, oh, wow, like maybe this is a possibility that is indeed true for this individual. that I've never once considered because I haven't been in that situation. And I know mm-hmm. that, like, obviously we all have different temperaments. We all have different personalities, but I'm just wondering how we get to that place, because that is, in my mind, like, that's monumental change in order for us to actually propel and go to a place where we're all living and working with one another more harmoniously is mm-hmm. how can you just be a little less, like, reactive to everything that mm-hmm. you hear? And, you know, that's probably one of the biggest issues with, like, our nation's leader right now is he himself is, like, a very reactive person. You see what I'm saying? Like, everything's a personal attack. And mm-hmm. I really wanted to help people get to this place where, you know, having a difference of opinion with somebody else is not something that needs to be, like, demonized or weaponized against you or that person. You know, having mm-hmm. a difference of opinion is merely an opportunity to be like, oh, wow, you know, I had never considered from that point of view. Like, thank you for sharing that with me. Like, that's now something that I recognize as a legitimate possibility. And although it's not something that, you know, has been true for me, I'm not going to be quick to say that it's not true at all. Mm-hmm. Let's continue learning more about that. Let's ask a follow-up question to that. Like, let's be more curious. Let's be more curious mm-hmm. about what the other side has to say. You know, coronavirus is interesting, man. Like, the world has come to a complete halt right now. How can we all take this downtime? And this is a question for you who is listening, you the listener. How can we all take this downtime right now to just be a little bit more interested in the other side, right? Everybody's always so worried. Everybody's always so trapped in their own mind about how they can come off as being the most interesting person in the room. Well, sometimes being the most interesting person in the room looks like being the most interested person in the room, meaning have a legitimate conversation. Take a second, take a pause to actually imagine yourself in the shoes of this person that you're communicating with. You know what I mean? Like that's just a little helpful tip that I want to offer up, because I think that the more we can get out of our own way, the more we can actually, like, lock arms and see that person move forward.
Exactly. Yeah. And it works from all sides of the spectrum, but
yeah,
you know, I've had a lot of friends ask me this question where they're like, you know, I feel bad about what's happening and I want to help, you know, facilitate change, but what do you recommend I do, or what can I do to do that? And I find myself taking a step back whenever I get this question, like, all of a sudden now I need to find the perfect answer to give them for them to, you know, to really make some sort of change. And at the end of the day, there is no perfect answer. There's a lot of different answers that will help, you know, going to that melting pot that helps lead to the change that, you know, that we want to see. And I think it starts at the end of the day, it really starts with, like we've talked about, you know, over and over, and this is really the main focus of this, you know, this first episode here, is it starts with actively listening, but it really starts with education. It starts with doing the research on what has happened for centuries in our country. It starts with reading books, you know, reading articles. I post a lot of things on, you know, on my social media pages in terms of specific instances or experiences that they're really not up for debate, you know, but they can help you understand why people are so fed up and so frustrated with what has continued to happen.
Right.
And so at the end of the day, I think that the biggest thing that we can all do, and myself included, because I don't know everything. I'm not going to pretend like I do. I'm not anywhere close to that. I recognize that. And that's why I'm reading books. That's why I'm watching, you know, more documentaries. That's why I'm doing more research, you know, online and having more conversations than I've ever had. Because I recognize that that's the only way we're really going to grow. And again, it goes back to the point of we all have to find some way in our lives and some way to be uncomfortable.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, but be comfortable with that.
And I just want to, like, double down on what you just said. You just said something that's very, very powerful that really struck a chord with me. And that is the fact that, like, I don't know it all either. I think one of the biggest gifts we can give ourselves is being willing to make peace with the fact that, like, it's okay that we don't know it all. You know what I mean? Like, as a Black man, no, but honestly, it's I'll be hard. Honest, man. As a Black man, yeah, dude, I've been getting a lot of attention these days about, like, Carl, like, help me understand this, or, you know, what's your answer to this question? And, you know, whenever, like, you're being posed a question, there's this temptation to not be found out. It's called imposter syndrome, right? There's, like, this temptation to have the best answer right on the spot that sounds like the most eloquent, that's, like, the best delivered. And all that is
bullshit. You don't want to get exposed.
You don't get exposed, but, like, it's bullshit. It's bullshit because, one, it keeps you trapped in your head. to where you're like playing this chess game with yourself, not even like a real opponent, trying to figure out like the best answer or the best comeback that you can fire out with that's going to make you look good. So you're coming from a self-absorbed place, right? Again, and that is not active listening. And two, again, you're cutting off possibilities of learning more, of actually holding yourself accountable to go and seek that answer out. Because the funny thing is like when you bullshit yourself or the person you're talking to with some random answer, you sort of sell yourself on like, oh yeah, I got this. Like I already know. When really you don't know. And this is an opportunity for us to all learn together and for us to all like share, right? Through conversating and sharing ideas. So I really wanted to highlight that because that's so, so, so powerful, again, towards this first theme of just being an active listener. So Ike, we're coming up on time and I want to be respectful of your time, but I think that we've done a pretty good job today, you know, kind of covering base one, if you will, right? And that's this whole, yo, no matter who you are, no matter where you come from, what you think you may know, be willing to know. I want to give people a little bit of an expectation as to what they're going to get from you and I going forward. So next week, we're going to do this once a week for the next couple Sundays. Next week, I think that, you know, the very next natural step will be, well, what are good questions for white people to have top of mind? What do you think about that, Ike? Because I think, and I want to hear from you, I hear a lot of people reaching out to me now, again, that are white people. They're like, oh man, like, I'm just scared I'm going to ask the wrong thing. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Are you hearing that? Are you hearing that as well in your sideline conversations, or what are you seeing on your end?
I love that, girl. I love that. It's like I get even from my girlfriend, you know, I love her to death. But one thing that initially was like, I feel like if I post certain, you know, something a certain way or like say a certain thing, like I'm going to offend someone. It's like,
right.
At the end of the day, like, do not worry about that. Like, that's not, you know, that's not what the case will be or what the issue is at hand. And, you know, I love the idea. I would, you know, all of our, you know, all of our friends, in particular, all of our white friends, please feel free to reach out to either of us and send us any questions that you have that you want us to discuss on this next episode. Because again, like, we're ready to talk about these things and we want you guys to have some sort of clarity in terms of those things. And, you know, moving forward, you know, share that knowledge with people in your lives. And so
here's what we're both going to do. We're both pretty active on Instagram. Ike and I are both going to go on Instagram after every episode that we do together. And so we'll do this right after this episode and we'll create one of those Q&A boxes. All right. Where we'll do a quick story saying, hey, we're doing, you know, a 3-part series all on Black Lives Matter and the racial injustices. And then we'll have a question and answer box. And we would invite you, whoever like watches our stories, to type in a question that you have around how to keep the conversation going. Given that today's series is focused on the conversation and active listening, write in any question and we will address those on the next podcast as well. How does that sound, my man?
I love that, dude. That sounds like a great idea, great plan. Let's do it.
Awesome, brother. Yeah, dude, I just want to thank you so much, bro, for being a real one, you know? And again, a big shout out to our friend, Neil Peterson, who's a white man that actually brought us together. I highlight and I stress white because one of the things that I'm trying to do on social media and just in my one-off conversations is I'm trying to share more stories about harmonious relationships that I have with people that look different from me, you know, and we'll get into this in some of the different episodes, but one of the biggest issues is the media and that which we see, you know, Black people only see, you know, Black on white issues, right? White people only see African-American communities that are just torn to shambles. And like, it's not always that, right? Like there are Black people that get along great with white people. There are Black people that do a lot of business with white people. And like, we have conversations and relationships that are deep substance that aren't just what is put out in front of us. And so I just want to give a shout out to our homie Neil, because he's one of those real ones to where, you know, if it wasn't for him, we wouldn't have the opportunity right now to have this conversation. And it just goes to show that like we can be glue, right? We can be glue. We don't have to always be divisive and sort of cut off from one another. So I just want to end the episode there and just let people know that like there is a lot more than meets the eye that really like bonds and connects us than what the media or even our minds will let us on to believe. at certain times.
Exactly. Yeah, and so, and just to double down on that, you know, as you know, Neil has been my very best friend since kindergarten. And so, you know, doing the math, I think, you know, we've been best friends for 23, 24 years at this point. And, you know, I've sent some screenshots of some of the things that him and I have discussed recently and his feelings on them. And he understands it. And as you know, Carl, he gets it and he's always gotten it, which is, I think, a big reason that we've been best friends and had the pleasure of being connected because of him. And, you know, he's a great guy, and I'm thankful. I'm forever thankful that he's allowed me to meet amazing people like yourself, and you know, and be, like I said, everything happens for a reason, I feel like, and you know, be able to really use our platforms and continue the narrative and continue the conversations. And so I'm excited, man.
Absolutely, bro. Well, I'll catch you on the next one, man. Till then, I just want to encourage all of you guys to lead with kindness, lead with love,
and actively listen.
And actively listen, absolutely. And if you're really, really moved by what's been discussed here today, think about somebody you could reach out to that you wouldn't normally talk to that's different from you.
I love that.
And just see if you can like practice having the conversation. Ike hit the nail on the head. It's going to be uncomfortable, but we're at a place right now where every single day of life right now, I don't know about you guys, it's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
I got to walk outside with a mask. I hate when I forget my mask in the car. Oh, yeah. Like it's all uncomfortable. So we have to be the incredible species that we are as complex human beings and show that we can adapt to a new way of living in order to move forward towards the light that exists. So I love you guys. We'll catch you on the next one. Peace.
Love you guys. Looking forward to the next one.
Thanks so much for tuning in. Remember, yesterday is gone and tomorrow is not promised. So there's no better time than the present to get into the arena of your life and to start moving towards your purpose and potential. Peace.
Hey, I want to personally thank you again for tuning in. At the end of the day, I really do believe that we're all in this game of life to help one another out. And that the best way we can do this is through sharing our stories more openly and honestly. And so, if you like the show, please take a quick minute to leave us a rating, drop us a review, and subscribe for more. Also, I'd love to get to know you a little bit better and hear your story. Please head over to carlsona.com/chat. That's Carl with a K, SONA.com/chat to book a 15-minute free Zoom call with me, and I can't wait to see you there.